You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 29 August, UK car production year-on-year sales data came out an hour ago, -14.4%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from MoneyWeb Studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Jimmy Muyaha. We had NVIDIA results last night after the US close. And it looks like they did well, but the stock market is pricing it down. We'll get Jimmy's view. Chatting Bidcorp results, good profits, good cash generation, and some strong markets. Africa doing well. Marius Oberholzer from Stanlib Multi-Asset Funds, diversification and where he's seeing opportunity. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. SA set for two-pot economic stimulus. Absa expects 78 billion rand in pot and savings pot withdrawals in the first year. Stanlib, more conservative, says around 50 billion. Pick and Pay, Business Day rather, Pick and Pay shareholders push back against a 16 million rand golden handshake to the exited CEO. They failed to get their 75% majority. Of course, it is a non-binding vote. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.6, NASDAQ down 1.2%. Over in the East, mostly red. We have got Sydney up 0.5%, Tokyo down a couple of points, 0.02, Hong Kong off 0.6%, Tencent down 0.2%. Commodities, red, gold, 2,548, Brent, 78.77, platinum, 941, palladium, 945. The rand, 1781, Bitcoin, 59,100. Top 40 opening call, about 100 points, or just over a tenth of a percent in the green.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Muyaha. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning, as I said there in the intro. The NVIDIA results, which came out after the US closed last night. My look at it, it looks like a beat, but perhaps a smaller beat than previous. Weirdly, I mean, it's been sold off in after-hours trading. Although after-hours trading is sometimes a bit of a misnomer. Your take on it, what did you think? What did you think of the market's reaction?
Morning, Simon. The results were better than expected. Obviously, the revenues were up 122-odd%. Profits were up. Earnings per share beat estimates. So by all metrics, the share price should have reacted quite positively. The market would have probably priced in a lot of other announcements alongside what we saw. NVIDIA also confirmed that they finally got that approval on the $50 billion buyback of some of their shares. And potentially, that could have been what markets didn't expect to see from there. But at the point where, you and I have spoken about this, at the point where a company like NVIDIA has had the run that it's had so soon, there is some form of market correction that markets will start to price in. But as you said as well, after-hours trading isn't really a barometer on how the market participants are feeling about that. I mean, the share price was down about 8% post-market, or at least in the later hours of the U.S. trading session after the market closed. So by all accounts, the company is doing well. The company is still on the right trajectory. I think the market was keenly awaiting these numbers, because if we look at some of the other numbers that came out, Salesforce also gave us numbers yesterday, but there's absolutely no mention of the Salesforce numbers in the build-up to yesterday's market close. Everything was focused squarely on NVIDIA, and the concentration that creates in terms of just the equity markets in general is quite an interesting one, because this is rarely has there been a time where we have been so focused or so engrossed in one particular company as opposed to an entire stock market. So at the moment, all eyes are on NVIDIA, and for now, NVIDIA keeps delivering.
It does keep delivering. I suppose we should keep the perspective that the stock's up 150% in the year. I mean, and is knocking it out of the park. But, you know, these are staggering numbers. And at some point, I suppose some sort of caution or reality needs to sort of permeate through the business and the price.
Absolutely. And with the chip side of the business, looking at the markets, you've got AI as this big revolution that everybody's going into and all companies are investing into and all of that. What markets need to start looking at the moment is this going to be a permanent and sustainable trajectory? For now, NVIDIA's chips are in excessively high demand to the point that they cannot meet that demand. Yeah. And this is kind of what was the case with PGMs a while ago before we decided to transition towards electric. I mean, whenever there is that demand in the markets, there's always going to be a situation like this, and you're looking at NVIDIA versus its competitors like Intel and AMD that are also chip manufacturers that are not making the same chips or that are not able to produce chips as quickly as NVIDIA. And the concern there is, okay, if NVIDIA is going to be at the forefront of this for forever, the share price can't just go in one way, in one single direction. It shouldn't just continuously go up without some form of retracement. But again, the retracement that we saw last night had nothing to do with the market, because all markets would have been closed at that time, the US included.
Yeah.
So I think as we digest the market movements over the next couple of days, potentially over today and tomorrow, we'll have to wait and see how the market actually starts to process that NVIDIA number. But by all metrics, the company is doing exceptionally well. Despite the stock split that took place, they're still continuing to say that we feel that we can still buy back the shares, and this is a good time to do it. I mean, your revenue numbers are meeting expectations. You've got excess capital that you're going to be able to deploy into something. Why not buy back your shares, increase the value of the company, and continue with the momentum while you have it?
Yeah, no, 100%. And the short answer is nothing can carry on growing at a plus 100%. I mean, that's just good old-fashioned math. We'll leave it there. Jimmy Muyaha, appreciate the early morning time. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you holding this hype stock? Let's be clear, it's a hype stock. The results are epic. No mistake about that. The product is epic, but it is a hype stock. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise. As hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanley Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Bidcorp CFO David Cleasby. Year-end results to end of June. Revenue up 15.1%, HEPS up 15.5%, and dividend up 16%. David, appreciate the early morning time. Strong set of numbers broadly across the board, but Europe really going well there. Trading profits up 21.6%. Strong performance out of that territory.
Yeah, morning, Simon. And we're very happy with our performance out of Europe. I mean, almost every business other than one small business actually performed much, much better. So, you know, it's come together in a pretty tight macro environment. We've interest rates have been at their peak in Europe for, you know, a number of years now. So consumer, you know, spending has come off, but, you know, notwithstanding that, the business has positioned itself, you know, better in the markets, and we've seen the results of that.
Looking through the numbers and looking at the acquisitions, and you did do some acquisitions during the period, bolt-on acquisitions, this growth is predominantly organic. I mean, some of it might be acquisitions, but it's contract wins more than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think we sort of measure our market growth by, we came out around just under 6%.
Mm-hmm.
Acquisitions contributed very little. I mean, it was sort of 0.2%, 0.3%. So absolutely organic. And I think, you know, in the circumstances where, you know, the world finds itself and, you know, economically, almost every jurisdiction is under pressure. You know, it is really a solid result in almost every jurisdiction.
The one line that really stood out for me was South Africa did well, China weak. You're doing well, and this is, I mean, I must stress again to the period end June. So, you know, there was load shedding in 9 months of the year. The election was in, you know, at the end of May. Yet South Africa did well. How's the trading sort of post period end?
Yeah, the momentum's continued. I think broadly South Africa seems to be in a much more positive position now. As you say, load shedding has ended. The politics seems to have settled down a bit, and there's a lot much more positivity around the place. So the momentum's continued. I think, you know, the ability of the teams, management teams, and the businesses to trade through, you know, fairly tough, challenging environments is a hallmark of Bidcorp. And you know, I think that's we've seen that in almost every jurisdiction, notwithstanding that economics have been tough.
Yeah, and I take your point, the hallmark of Bidcorp, and positions well for when times are perhaps a little less tough. Running through, I mean, we've seen, I mean, globally, inflation certainly come down. Is that your experience broadly, aside from, and we'll touch on labour in a moment, but that you've seen a decrease in inflationary pressures?
Yeah, the way we measure food, I mean, food inflation is obviously a big part of how we, you know, measure our success. And we've seen that in the last 15 months come down from about 15%, measured on a weighted basis across the world, to just under 2%. So it has been a big, I wouldn't say negative, but it certainly it wasn't the big driver that we saw in the previous periods.
You mentioned in results that labor costs are becoming a challenge. You're able to find the right people, but perhaps they're costing more. Is that sort of across the group or more pronounced in certain markets?
Well, I think it's more pronounced in the developed world. You know, it's not necessarily an issue with, let's say, in Africa and in LATAM. But certainly in most parts of the developed world, it is an issue. And you know, we activity levels, as we've said, have been up and nicely up. So we've had to have, you know, employ more people. But the reality is that, you know, there is pressure on labor costs. And it's really a case of there's still too much, you know, demand for supply. And I guess if that rolls over, then we'll see some relief come through. If it doesn't, it's going to continue to be, you know, a bit of a pressure in the businesses. And not only for us, but, but for the broad economies as a whole.
Absolutely. Last question. Acquisitions, as I said, you did a couple of bolt-ons during the period. I think you say you've done two subsequent to that. The key line was that you see lots of opportunity out there, but lots coming across your desk, but perhaps being cautious as to which ones you bite for.
I think we're cautious in respect of what we like. And, you know, we've stuck to our knitting in terms of food service wholesaling. And you know, we see a lot of food service broad, you know, opportunities, but they don't necessarily all fit what we would like to do. And that's, I guess, to expand our geographic reach in each country or add more products to our existing, you know, channels. So we do look at a lot, and a lot of it really doesn't fit. And I think also, you know, people do have price expectations that maybe don't meet what we're willing to, you know, pay for value. And therefore, we do walk away from a lot.
We'll leave it there. That's Bidcorp CFO David Cleasby. Appreciate the early morning time.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Maurice Oberholzer. He's head of multi-asset investments at Stanlib. Maurice, always appreciate the time. Multi-asset funds, what makes them a compelling option for local South African investors?
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me. Well, I think, you know, first things first, we all like supporting winning teams. I mean, the Springboks are playing this weekend and they're on a winning run, and let's hope it continues. But, you know, if you think about multi-asset funds or balanced funds historically, they've been a great solution for investors, and not just in South Africa, but globally. And, you know, the compelling part really comes into a one-stop shop, if you like, putting it very simplistically, in terms of handing over your asset allocation decisions to a manager that's watching markets really closely day by day and tilting you in and out of risk at various points of the market cycle. And I think, you know, from an investment perspective, that becomes really interesting because people don't have to go through capital gains tax events, moving from one equity fund to a bond fund, et cetera. And people can sleep well at night. And as I said, it's had a fantastic run as a solution while assets have been uncorrelated, you know, historically, and certainly going back the last few decades or so. So I think there are many reasons that it is a place that people can have a core solution and let the professionals in the industry handle the asset allocation for them.
Yeah, I like the expert point. I also hadn't, honestly, never thought about the capital gains, but of course that's a biggie. How have they evolved? I mean, back in the day, I remember certainly in the 90s and early, you know, the last, it was always that 60-40, 60 equity, 40 bonds. Is it more nuanced than that these days?
I think it's much more nuanced. I mean, the world has moved on and it's become, you know, even though volatility is at very low levels in the markets, the noise levels are much higher and the opportunity sets are much higher. So what we've seen, and it really came about financial crisis, post the financial crisis, where, you know, fixed income as a general asset class wasn't yielding you much. I'm talking in developed markets. You know, we had negative interest rates in many places and bonds were, in that world, offering you no returns and no real correlation benefits. And what we saw internationally was a real move towards trying to build more robust portfolios that could withstand market shocks like 2008. So you had people developing things called risk parity and going away from fixed income as a low-risk asset and trying to structure portfolios differently. And I think that evolution has continued since 2008 and really was, again, a stark reminder in 2022 for investors internationally, even with high bond yields. You know, bonds can fall out of bed. You know, in our previous chat a few months ago, I mentioned to you that philosophy that we have is all assets are risk assets. Yeah. And if you start thinking along those lines, you can start thinking around trying to find assets or instruments that really give you lots of correlation benefits. Because 2022, we saw bonds and equities were highly correlated. And people forget that pre-98, pre-2000, bonds and equities were positively correlated. And so there's this amazing assumption that the decorrelated characteristics or the correlation characteristics between bonds and equities will hold up again as we move through this next rate cutting cycle. But I would suggest that the world is potentially very different. And therefore, this new way of approaching multi-asset investing, getting lots of different granular bets in your portfolios rather than simply bonds and equities, is an interesting proposition for people to consider. Not necessarily better, but interesting.
I take your point on that. And it's around very much, and your answer to that almost sort of leads into my next question, which is around how you think around diversification. And it is, I suppose, in the olden days, it used to be, well, you know, where's things that are negatively correlated, that sort of works. But there's so much more to it. And I like your point around robustness of it.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, the first thing, when somebody's handing you money to invest in a multi-asset solution, they're not looking for the growthy, high-octane stuff. People do want a smoother return profile than they would get from racy venture capital or equity type returns. And it's not always that simple to find diversifying assets or instruments because, you know, the characteristics change of these assets. So the way we think around diversification is really, obviously, the asset classes, hopefully you diversify across asset classes and you don't want to diversify using a Buffett terminology. Yeah. You don't want to diversify. You want to diversify and you want to make sure the bets in your portfolio are doing very specific things. Is it a hedge? Is it an alpha strategy? Is it a beta strategy? Do you want to use passives or active investment strategies? Do you want to diversify across geographies? Again, very relevant for a South African investor now that they can move to 45% offshore. Yeah. Do you want to diversify across time horizons and currencies? Do you want to bring commodities into your picture? Not so useful in the unit trust world because we can't invest directly in oil futures or things like that. But those types of instruments can lend themselves to put to you to create a portfolio almost like a centipede. And I'm going to borrow this phrase from Hugh Henry in the old hedge fund world. He used to talk about building a portfolio like a centipede, that if you lose one leg or two legs, your portfolio can keep going, right? Rather than these big bet portfolios, which historically has been the case in the balanced world, where very big equity bet, stylized, you know, everyone wants to be Warren Buffett. I'm a value investor and I hold a little bit of bonds, and you go through massive periods of underperformance. Where investors now expect more from their managers, I think, than just waiting for the cycle to turn in their favor.
Yeah, and it goes back to one of your very first points, is that the investor wants to be able to sleep at night and leave the rest to you. A last question, where are you seeing some current compelling opportunities out there for investors?
Well, you know, I've been back in South Africa for 12 years and at Stanlib now for 10, and it's the first time I'm really positive on South African equities, which I know I'm not alone, but I think it's a really compelling situation that we find ourselves in this country because assets are cheap, both fixed income and equities. We do have a Chinese problem, if you like. So a lot of our commodity counters are somewhat handicapped. But there's real valuation opportunity in the mid-cap and what the industry calls the SA Inc. And while it's very early days, I do think the sense of optimism around the GNU coupled with an Eskom situation, which is hopefully in the rearview mirror now, and a real mood of confidence and optimism that's out there that will bring ultimate investors, and I don't mean the investors like you and I mean the CEOs of businesses that do real investments on the ground. And that confidence will translate into market returns, assuming the path of the GNU is positive. Flip side of that is we do sit in a world that is highly fractured. People have been saying this for a while, but we've got elections coming up in the United States with stark changes in policy and an interest rate path that the market has potentially got ahead of itself. And so while we have this opportunity in South Africa that looks really appealing, we need to think about the cyclicality of market and the market risks right now. And there's a plethora of opportunities around expressing those views. So I think it's a really fertile environment for a top-down macro investor, as well as people that have the opportunity to go in a wide range of opportunity sets, wide range of assets, wide range of geographies, and also have the skill sets to deploy into those geographies different strategies, different ways of enhancing the returns, managing volatility, and delivering what clients ultimately need. So I think it's a great opportunity, but I'm very excited about SA for the moment. I never thought I'd say it, but
yeah. It's been a long time. I'm with you. It's been a long time since I've been excited around SA. I mean, almost back to the World Cup. And that was a long, long time ago. We'll leave it there. It's Maurice Oberholzi. He's head of multi-asset investments. Stanlib, appreciate the time. Attention all investors and finance enthusiasts, get ready for the annual Money Summit, Africa's largest and most influential savings and investment event. Join me on Tuesday, September the 10th, Sandton Convention Center, as we connect with over 100 top CEOs and industry leaders across 20 exciting conferences and forums, all on one day. Secure your spot now. Register online, moneysummit.co.za, for free with the code MONEYWEBGUEST. This is your chance to be part of Africa's premier savings and investment event. Don't miss it. That's it for today. We were chatting with Kamran Mepelwani yesterday about that Pick and Pay trading update. Closed 16 stores. Box is doing well, but of course they're going to list it. We asked if you hold Pick and Pay. Around 40% each were saying watching and waiting, or no, looks like trouble. The rest said yes, great potential. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. What happened to the 60/40 portfolio?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.